go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing and discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, ho, 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 howdy. It is a minute past the hour on this, the 24th day of December 2012. It is Christmas Eve, still here in the Eastern Time Zone. This is The Horn, headonradionetwork.com. Easily available, the stream is, at said web address. Or you can also use a multiplicity, a variety of online platforms that make it accessible to your smartphone device. Things like Stitcher.com, TuneIn.com. Had a note from our buddy Ray the other day saying that the Horn is climbing in the ranks at TuneIn.com, which is awfully nice. You can also, if you get the TuneIn Pro app for your phone, you can also record the program for later use or later listening. A lot of happy holiday stuff going on. We did a lot of our happy holiday stuff yesterday, traveling the 90 or so miles over to visit the grandchildren and my two daughters and one of my daughter's husband, the father of the three grandchildren. I know, it gets a little confusing, doesn't it? We had a very merry day of it. I posted some photos online, posted them on my Twitter feed and my Facebook account. If you don't follow me on Facebook, Bob Kincaid, or Twitter, Bob Kincaid. It is literally that easy. By the way, the email address is Bob Kincaid. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. The email address is Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, at gmail.com. Really, it is Christmas Eve. Don't know why your real player is cutting in and out, R.L. Smith. We're sending rather nicely here, it looks like. Things appear to be fairly normal. You know, remembering, of course, as Peter Godbold taught us, that normal is merely a setting on a dryer. R.L. Smith tells me in the chat room, wander on over to the chat room. What a wonderful place to hang out and spend a little bit of Christmas Eve this evening. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com/chatroom. R.L. Smith says, Bob, I got an 11-pound and a 13-pound prime rib at 128 degrees and sitting on it. Dinner for 22 adults and three tricycle motors in an hour. Wow. That's going to be some kind of good. That's going to be some kind of yummy. So, feel free to share what your holiday plans are. We just had a wonderful time yesterday. Part of the Christmas tradition, at least here, part of our, and you know that's what it is, isn't it? It's family tradition. For about in excess of 100 years, Christmas time, I guess, was the only time when it was cold enough that you could safely ship seafood into a distant place like the hills and hollers of Appalachia. And so, people struggled to be able to afford some oysters. That's what it was about, oysters. They came in barrels, packed in ice. And so, as far back as my father or mother could tell me, on Christmas Day, there were oysters. And so yesterday, we got some oysters. And all the relevant makings, drove over to my daughter and son-in-law's home and made our traditional oysters bienville and fried oysters. I like to call those fried oysters a la Kenneth. That was my dad's name. Fried oysters a la Kenneth are fried oysters that are dipped in egg, then dipped in pancake batter. Just the mix, not the wet. Egg, pancake batter, back in the egg, and then into cracker meal. And this year, Agnes had the wonderful idea of replacing the cracker meal with panko breadcrumbs. And they were delightful. Made homemade cocktail sauce, which is nothing but ketchup and enough horseradish to choke a moose, and a little bit of lemon juice. Quite tasty. And just proceeded to have a wonderful, warm family time over there with our grandbabies and with our two daughters and one son-in-law. We got back about midnight last night. It is, I guess, approaching Christmas, or approaching midnight mass time in Rome, is it not? 6.06 p.m. here on the East Coast, Eastern Time Zone. So we're either 5 or 6 hours away. They ought to be rolling His Holiness out any time now, right? Yeah, big thanks. Big thanks to His Holiness for really channeling the spirit of Christmas with a special Christmas marriage or message. Yeah, it certainly ain't marriage. With a special Christmas message for anybody who believes differently than him. He's given his Christmas message, Ab Urbe Ad Orbe, from the city to the world. In which he declared, a couple of guys who want to love each other for the rest of their lives getting married as a manipulation of nature. Two women who are committed to be together for the rest of their natural lives in some sort of ceremony sacred to them, if not sacred to the old anti-aircraft gunner here, a manipulation of nature. Yeah, he said it was a threat to world peace. Really. The guy who is the titular head of the religion of peace, the birth of whose avatar, savior, messiah, Prince of Peace, is, for want of an actual day, celebrated tomorrow. Instead of decrying war, instead of condemning hatreds, opened up his nasty old grudge closet of his own and waged war of a verbal sort, of a spiritual sort, on people for the way in which they choose merely to love one another. Ho, ho, humbug. I read that story earlier today and I thought, I knew there was a reason that, right. So, just to get things started, and by the way, we will carry on with a Christmas tradition in this household a little bit later in the evening. We will have the reading of the Christmas story from the King James Version, because after all, God Almighty speaks King James English. We'll have the reading of the Christmas story from Matthew and Luke a little later in the program. Ferg's going to haul out his guitar and play a little something. And if the guy who's supposed to be the vicar of Christ can't manifest a little bit of love, I guess that we're just going to have to, even those of us who don't much believe in the hokum, we'll just have to pick up the slack. Right? Yeah. See, I kind of knew. Well, it's the Pope Benedicts of the world that bring this kind of thing out in you.
If any of you are looking for any last-minute gift ideas for me, I have one. I'd like Frank Shirley, my boss, right here tonight. I want him brought from his happy holiday slumber over there in Melody Lane with all the other rich people, and I want him brought right here with a big ribbon on his head. And I want to look him straight in the eye, and I want to tell him what a cheap, lying, no-good, rotten, four-flushing, low-life, snake-licking, dirt-eating, inbred, overstuffed, ignorant, blood-sucking, dog-kissing, brainless, dickless, hopeless, heartless, fat-ass, bug-eyed, stiff-legged, spotty-lipped, worm-headed sack of monkey shit he is! Hallelujah! Holy shit! Where's the Tylenol?
I really like Christmas. It's sentimental, I know, but I just really like it. I am hardly religious. I'd rather break bread with Dawkins than Desmond Tutu, to be honest. And yes, I have all of the usual objections to consumerism, to the commercialization of an ancient religion, to the westernization of a dead Palestinian press ganged into selling PlayStations and beer. But I still really like it. I'm looking forward to Christmas, though I'm not expecting a visit from Jesus. I'll be seeing my dad, my brother and sisters, my gran and my mum. They'll be drinking white wine in the sun. I don't go in for ancient wisdom. I don't believe just 'cause ideas are tenacious, it means that they're worthy. I get freaked out by churches. Some of the hymns that they sing have nice chords, but the lyrics are dodgy. And yes, I have all of the usual objections to the miseducation of children who in tax-exempt institutions are taught to externalize blame and to feel ashamed and to judge things as plain right or wrong. But I quite like the songs. I am not expecting big presents. The old combination of socks, jocks, and chocolates is just fine by me. 'Cause I'll be seeing my dad, my brother and sisters, my gran and my mum. They'll be drinking white wine in the sun. I'll be seeing my dad, my brother and sisters, my gran and my mum. They'll be drinking white wine in the sun. And you, my baby girl, my jet-lagged infant daughter, you'll be handed round the room like a puppy at a primary school. And you won't understand, but you will learn someday that wherever you are and whatever you face, these are the people who'll make you feel safe in this world. My sweet blue-eyed girl. And if my baby girl, when you're 21 or 31, and Christmas comes around, and you find yourself 9,000 miles from home, you'll know whatever comes. Your brothers and sisters and me and your mom will be waiting for you in the sun when Christmas comes. Your brothers and sisters, your aunts and your uncles, your grandparents, cousins, and me and your mom will be waiting for you in the sun, drinking white wine in the sun. Darling, whenever you come, we'll be waiting for you in the sun, drinking white wine in the sun. Sun, waiting for you in the sun. Darling, when Christmas comes, we'll be waiting for you in the sun. I know,
that has become my favorite Christmas song of all. That is Tim Minchin, of course. M-I-N-C-H-I-N. The name of the song is White Wine in the Sun. Found that circuitously through our buddy David in Tennessee about this time last year, I believe. It just about has everything, doesn't it? But most particularly, all the sale proceeds, it used to be at iTunes, but now it's at Amazon and several other different outlets. All the proceeds from the sale of White Wine in the Sun, and if you've got the old version, which is slower and it's just piano, this is the brand new studio version that was just released this year, and it's available at all the Amazon, iTunes, what have you. And all the proceeds benefit autism research. And that makes it even better. I'd rather break bread with Desmond with Dawkins than Desmond Tutu, to be honest. Magnificent. White Wine in the Sun. Best 99 cents I've spent in a while. We will maybe do some other Christmas music through the course of the evening. Haven't played a lot during the season because, well, you know, it's hard to talk about a bunch of children getting gunned down and then move over to Frosty the Snowman. It's just been that kind of an end of the year. Now, yes, as a matter of fact, Tim from L.A. writing in, Bob, after your rant about the Pope and homosexuality, you're going to read from the King James Version. King James was a homosexual. Yes, Christians, King James, the queer, was inspired to write God's Word, shaking head out of disgust. Gee, no wonder I'm an atheist. See, if you know, the thing about that is, the King James Bible was, well, yeah, James was pretty much, well, bi at the very least. But, you know, he's the king, and the king can do anything he bloody well wants. But he put together, there were a lot of people getting murdered over which version of the Bible to read. You know, more of that Prince of Peace stuff. And King James pulled together a commission to come up with a definitive English language Bible. What they did is they took Tyndale's Bible, which was already a pretty much elegant piece of work, and they tweaked it. Because they didn't want no more of that Latin Vulgate Bible. They wanted to be able to read it for themselves and not be told what was in it. Interestingly, we've come full circle on that with fundamentalists today, instead choosing to be told what's in it instead of reading it. But yeah, we use the King James because it's... Well, have you ever read a modern language translation of Shakespeare? It's not engaging. It isn't lovely. So, yeah, that's why. And also because we've got something like an 8-year record of the little ones growing up. Maybe less than that. Of the little ones growing up and reading it on air. It's kind of sweet, really. And I got to thinking it won't be too awfully long before the grandkids will be reading it because, well, one never knows. It's one of those things that makes Christmas wistful. The returning home, the going elsewhere, the visiting, the being together, 9,000 miles away, you know, like in the song. One of ours is already out of the house and making her own home. Another one will be going shortly. Ferg is talking about what he wants his future to be. And Doodle, who will soon be 16, the baby, you know, the baby, is making those sorts of inquiries as well. So it won't be too awfully long before I have to figure out a way to get the grandkids in on the act. Maybe this thing will hang on long enough for a second generation to grow up before your very eyes. So, yeah, I do love that song. These are the people who make you feel safe in this world. Funny how an atheist distilled it to its very essence, isn't it? I know what happened. Okay, all good. It's really difficult on a Christmas Eve just to jump into the cesspit. And bearing in mind the gentle nudge I got toward the end of last week about talking about all this gun business constantly, I mention what happened today, well, with sadness, with horror, what happened in the early morning hours and up in east of Rochester in roughly the Finger Lakes region of New York. Gotten several emails about it. The journalism is still sketchy. But a man, of course, a man, you could do the Rip Van Winkle thing and say, wake me up when one of these is perpetrated by a woman. Out snooze, old Rip. But yes, a man, ambushed a bunch of firefighters earlier today. He set a fire knowing that his neighbors, being neighbors, would call the fire department. And he then laid in ambush for them. He gunned down two firefighters and two others are laying in hospital in critical condition. The murderer's name is William Spengler. Turned out, back in 1980, William Spengler beat his grandmother to death with a hammer. Spent 17 years in the prison system of the state of New York for that. And so, with another of his relatives, his mother, having died just a couple of months back, and living in a home with his sister, he took a position atop an earthen berm and waited for the firefighters to show up and began picking them off. Webster, New York Police Chief Gerald Pickering said people who get up in the middle of the night to fight fires, they don't expect to get shot and killed. Thomas Kosofka was also killed. Police Lieutenant Michael Chaparini was a volunteer firefighter, and he too was killed. The fire spread to five other homes. And a SWAT team bus was brought in to take the residents caught in the crossfire. To safety. His 67-year-old sister, Cheryl Spengler, has yet to be accounted for, so the victim count may rise higher. Of course, the sketchy details out of this seem almost tailor-made for the NRA. Well, look, he killed somebody with a hammer and he come back to kill again. What are you going to do, ban all the hammers? Please expect, not that I'm getting out my tattered and frayed magician's robe with the peeling applique moons and stars on them or anything, and my magic eight ball, the cracked one that says always says answer hazy, ask again later. Doesn't take any of that to figure this out. The NRA, somewhere in NRA headquarters, they are eagerly awaiting word of whether or not this was perhaps just a bolt action hunting rifle, and they're hoping against hope that it wasn't some sort of multi-rounded banana-clipped assault rifle. Please God, let it be a Remington bolt-action 30-06, please. Because see, that will then become the next media talking point. Well, maybe we were wrong about the NRA, Fred. Maybe they've got a point. Maybe it's not about the automatic weapons. Maybe it's about the crazy people. God Almighty. Just another day in Merca. Just another day in which we will not do the hard business of trying to figure out how, perhaps at some point in time, we turn ourselves into a civilized society. Meanwhile, over the weekend, in the upper Midwest, in an act of solidarity with a movement in Canada called Idle No More, in which a tribal leader named Teresa Spence is presently on a hunger strike, demanding that tribal rights be recognized in Canada by the Canadian government in regard to the vast environmental degradation being done to tribal peoples in Canada. Idle No More has sprung up, and it has a number of supporters in the United States. I've seen a statement of support from as far away as the Taino people of South Florida. But they took their message out over the weekend. Native peoples converged in flash mobs in two or three different malls in the upper Midwest. And they brought drums and drumsticks. And they brought the power of their voices. And they brought their children, who are in fact the future. And the malls called out enhanced security because having a bunch of Indians beating drums and singing in celebration at the holiday season is a security threat. Whereas if a bunch of white people walk around in ancient Turkish garb, you know, the red suit with the white trim, and sing, "O come all ye faithful, Adeste Fidelis," well, that's okay. But we can't be having any of that praise for the winter season going on in, say, the ancient language of the peoples of the upper Midwest. So that's kind of where we are. Native peoples with drums, security threat. Then, according to the National Rifle Association, a few million civilianized military firearms, not a security threat. It's hard to fathom. There's a lot of hard to fathom out there. A whole lot of hard to fathom. I think, for instance, of stuff like this guy. This guy being Randolph Lynn what was the word we came up with for Indiana? Not Indiana, Stan. No. No, anyway. Randolph Lynn has reached a deal whereby he will cut his 40-year jail sentence in half, you know, to 20 years, kind of like the 17 years that this Spengler guy did for murdering his grandmother with a hammer. This past September 30th, Randolph Lynn of Talibandiana, there it is, Randolph Lynn of Talibandiana tried to set fire to a mosque in Ohio. He went to the Islamic Center of Greater Toledo, carrying with him a number of firearms and containers of gasoline. His intent was to destroy the Islamic Center of Greater Toledo. He had, of course, been drinking shall we say, heavily prior to the event. He told the judge that he had had as many as 45 beers in 7 hours. Wow. I can't even begin to comprehend 45 beers in 27 hours, let alone 7. 7 and 4, 6 times 42. It would be a 6-pack per hour if it was 48 over 8. My gracious, he was pounding them, wasn't he? How does this guy... I didn't know they made mechanical livers that you could just wheel along beside you. The judge looked at him in the sentencing after the facts of the plea had been struck Judge Jack Zuhari was satisfied with the terms and conditions. He said, when you went through that door, you did not attack extremists or terrorists. Instead, you attacked the place where families come to pray. Ironically, it's your own violence that was sinful and evil. He has not been sentenced yet. Merely the plea deal has been reached. He was charged with 40 years worth of crime. He is pleading to 20 years' worth. It may take 20 years for him to sober up. The judge, Zuhari, naturally wanted to know why Mr. Lynn had felt of St. Joseph, Talibandiana, or St. Joe, I don't know. Ironic, either way. Wanted to know why I did it. Why I'd done it. Why'd you done it? And the answer will come as no surprise to anyone. My God, this is Moran Monday, isn't it? It's a Christmas miracle! We have our first Moran. And I wasn't even looking for him. Oh, but I have a feeling there's going to be several more. We'll save that. We'll save the circus music for next week. Oh, that'll be New Year's Eve. Anyway. In explanation for why Mr. Lynn had decided to do this after 45 beers, and I just get this vision of him, well, Judge, there was light beer. I got to watch my figure. The judge asked him, you know, why'd you do it? And he said, I got riled up after watching Fox News. Ding, 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 ding. So the judge said, do you even know any Muslim people, or do you even understand what Islam is? He said, I know they don't believe in Jesus Christ as the Savior. And the judge says, well, there are others who don't believe in Jesus Christ, and our boy here, you know, the guy who's out there advocating for the Prince of Peace by setting fire to mosques after drinking 45, 47 beers in 7 hours. 45 and 7, yeah. You don't know why he didn't just finish off the second case. He was only 3 away. 24 and 24. Or maybe he was going for that Keystone Light 18-pack, and that's a different kind of multiplication. Or addition, even. No, after being told there are others who don't believe in Jesus Christ, defender of the faith, Randolph Lynn, then responded, well, they're not going around killing us. One wonders if the beer had worn off. But the fact of the real nugget in this is his admission that, like so many other of these benighted, bloodthirsty freaks, he was motivated by the poison that got poured in his ear, just like poor old Hamlet's daddy, in the play of the same name, got killed by having poison poured in his ear. And Randolph Lynn got it poured in his ears and through his eyeballs, day after day after day after week after month after year. And after a while, the Keystone Light or the Old Milwaukee, in conjunction with the Fox News, began a talking to him and said, I gotta save America from them Toledo Muslims, them Islams, because they're going around killing us. Really, honest to God, all voices aside, how many stories do you bet Randolph Lynn heard about the Ground Zero Mosque? Right? But he had that poison poured in through his ears and in through his eyes. I ran across something the other day. I hope these are factually accurate. I want them to be. You have two eyes, each composed of 130 million photoreceptor cells. In each one of those cells, there are 100 trillion atoms. That's all the stars in the Milky Way galaxy. However, each atom in each cell in each eye formed in the core of a star billions of years ago. And yet, here they are today being utilized to capture the energy released from that same process, all to expand the consciousness that is you. The universe has an interesting sense of irony in that you are the universe experiencing itself. All you are is a thought. But something happened to the 100 trillion atoms in Randolph Lynn's eyes. The 100 trillion atoms in each cell, the 130 million photoreceptor cells in any given eye, 260 million to someone with both eyes functioning. Two hundred and sixty million for both eyes. Something happened to those cells. Something happened to the atoms in those cells. And instead of within the framework established by the National Rifle Association. How do we analyze this case? And I'm not being facetious. How do we analyze this case within the framework that the NRA has given us? Obviously, the man had guns and gasoline, but if the NRA are to be believed, we certainly cannot trust or look at the guns and gasoline. But, on the other hand, the NRA tells us that in the case of young disaffected people who start, who create these nightmares, that we have to look at what has perverted their senses. In light of the fact that this guy, under oath, in court, said, I don't know nothing about no Muslim except what I hear on the Fox News. And you can just bet that the only time he's ever seen like something like MSNBC is when he's clicking down to Fox and he sees a brief image of Rachel Maddow and he says, Lebanese, and keeps going. Everything he's gotten has been from Fox. Unless, of course, he can operate a computer, at which point he's probably the grand Kleagle or supreme wizard over at the Free Republic. Or maybe he's a devotee of Wingnut Daily. Or maybe, seeing as how he started a fire in the mosque, maybe he goes over to Glenn Beck's The Blaze. And under this NRA framework, we have to talk about, we can't talk about the guns and the gasoline. We have to talk about, Fox News. But don't hold your breath for any sort of a press conference from the NRA talking about how we need to have a national discussion about the negative effects of Fox News on our culture. Oh, no. So this business of the atoms and cells in the eye, being a function of the universe experiencing itself, shall we understand then, is this confirmation that George Lucas was right and there is a dark side to the Force and a, you see what I mean? Does the dark side have to drink 45 beers to experience itself? 45 beers. I guess that probably explains why he didn't use the firearms and instead used the gasoline. But if you look around, these stories are everywhere. They're constant. I mean, even if that was, what is it, Miller 64 or what, and that stuff's like 1.2% alcohol. You'd still be a mess. And the guy drove from Talibandiana to Toledo? See, that's the part of the story we don't know. Did he drive to Toledo with his guns and his gas cans and then he filled up his gas... Hell, I get nervous filling up the gas cans and driving from town back to here. That's 2 miles. So did he drive from Talibandiana to Toledo with his gas cans and his guns? And then he got himself a hotel room and got a couple of cases of Milwaukee's Beast. Light. Or maybe, no, maybe he's a hardcore. Maybe it was Milwaukee's Beast Ice. And got himself all genu-damn wine liquored up. Beard up. All the while listening to the voices in his head that he'd heard on the Fox News. Hell, Unless there's like a Super 8 sitting right next to the Islamic Center of Greater Toledo, how did he even... Does there need to be an investigation of the Toledo Police Department to find out how a guy who's drunk 45 freaking beers... I mean, did he walk? More questions than answers. But you know what? That's not the real problem in America. You know what the real problem in America is, right?
Mm-hmm.
Liberals. During the times when Brian Fisher of the American Family Association of Tupelo, Mississippi, is not on the air, they have someone else on the air named Sandy Rios. And Sandy Rios, well, damn it. Sandy Rios has us all figured out. Knows us down to a T. You'll see what I mean.
Interesting how the left pushes this stuff. So much of this always comes down to Christmas. Remember last year, the Obamacare bill, they kept members of Congress debating on Christmas Eve? You know, just... They have no concern, no real concern about what this season means to people, because it doesn't mean much to them. I mean, other than just a family holiday, I don't think they understand. There's no reverence for it. And so they voted Christmas Eve last year for Obamacare, and now, interestingly enough, the same tactic is being employed in Illinois in a very different way. And when we come back in January, we will discuss this. But suddenly, as of last Friday, gay activists in Illinois want homosexual marriage in Illinois. They want it. And so it looks like a vote will...
Why does she sound surprised? Did you know that? Gay activists in Illinois want homosexual marriage in Illinois. Where did she think they wanted it? I mean, I know these people aren't real bright. The fact of the matter is, if you went and tried to find a marriage equity activist in Illinois, they'd probably say that they want marriage equity in Alabamistan. But they work with what they've got. They'll leave marriage equity in Alabamistan to marriage equity advocates in Alabamistan, and then they'll work on what's going on. At least she doesn't call it Illinois. Sheesh. But anyway, let's let her reach the gravamen.
Suddenly, as of last Friday, gay activists in Illinois want homosexual marriage in Illinois. They want it. And so it looks like a vote will take place. Are you ready? Sometime between January 2nd and 9th. January 2nd and 9th. So pro-family forces in Illinois are trying to gear up. Guess what time of year this is? Guess what weekend this is? The weekend before Christmas. When churches are doing, you know, special programs, music, pastors are preparing profound sermons, you know, to, as an outreach to the community. This is what Christian people who care about Christmas, being the same ones who are concerned about implementing homosexual marriage, this is how they win their battles.
I'll be damned. I didn't know we were winning. I feel so much better now. We're just ruining all their fun because they're too busy organizing what boozeless eggnog celebrations and going out caroling, you know, down south where Jesus, they're strapping in for possible outbreaks of tornadoes tomorrow. That's not a joke. They really are. There's a band of storms headed for the southeast right now that could spawn real nastiness. Down there where people love Jeebus more than anybody loves Jeebus in the whole country. Go figure. This in via email from our buddy Fritz in Arkansas. Subject line, mosque-burning beer guy in Toledo. Perhaps he had flashbacks to those Go for the Gusto ads for Schlitz. I found that recently, yes, indeed, Schlitz-branded beer is back in some states. It is. It's owned by PBR. They're trying to revive the brand as a sort of retro cool. Or maybe it was the Schlitz malt. I don't know. Whatever it is, I don't want none of it, because, just sounds icky. Well, let's take a minute and go to the phones, because this is Conversation Radio, after all. Listener-supported Conversation Radio. We try to raise about $150 a night. Friday was a bust, and you get the idea. PayPal buttons at headonradionetwork.com, so too is the snail mail address. And we have Jeremy calling from Vermont. Hey, Jeremy.
Hey, Bob.
How you doing?
Well,
yeah.
Yeah, not too bad. Merry Christmas. here we are again, another shooting a week later.
Yeah, or as Cassie said, Merry Seasonings.
Yeah, exactly. Like I said, here we are, not even a week later, well, a week to the day, and here are two more shootings.
Yeah, doesn't it just...
Just don't...
Go ahead.
I don't even know what to say anymore. I kind of... It's just... very frustrating.
No, I don't know. I don't know what to say anymore either, except to say that we can expect this. And frankly, I think...
Right.
It's gonna get very nervous making for the next, because I think the danger we run into, Jeremy, is when we think that there's something randomized about this. Because this is not random.
Right.
This has been ginned up. This is something that the right wing has been driving for all along. This outbreak of violence. Remember when the Virginia Republican Party called for armed revolution if Obama was reelected? Well, we make a mistake, I think, Jeremy, when we imagine something like civil insurrection as being just like what happened 150 years ago, where, you know, the nut bunch lines up across from the blue bunch and everybody shoots at each other. Warfare, as even the geniuses in the Pentagon can tell you, has become what do they call it? Not asymptomatic. There's another word. But anyway, it doesn't look like war used to look like. And this is beginning to resemble that. Asymmetrical warfare. There's the word.
You know, I remember a few weeks back, we were laughing about all the people in Texas who wanted to secede. Well, there's actually a fraction of people here in Vermont that want to secede from the Union, too. For different reasons. I'm not sure why, but it cracks me up when I think about that. I mean, here we are, the first state in the Union that actually... I'm still here.
Please, go ahead.
I was going to say, here we are, the first state in the Union which abolished slavery, and we claim to be this and that, but we still have people here who want to secede.
But probably for purposes of maybe joining Canada, is that the idea?
I'm honestly not sure. I'd like to think that's what it is, but I think it might be for other reasons.
Well, if I was Vermont, I'd be pretty pissed off after having seen that one yokum from Texas who said, "Well, I don't even want to be in the same country with Vermont."
We can ship him down to Mexico, which is take away our National Guard, border, all that stuff, and fence him off.
Tempting, isn't it?
See how long we survive.
Exactly.
Well, I just want to chime in on today's events. No surprise, no shock. It's just come to be a null moment for all of us now.
I hate that, too. I genuinely do.
Yeah, So do I.
Well, have the best and happiest holiday that you can, Jeremy, and I look forward to hearing from you, at a later date.
You too, Bob. Thanks
right.
a lot.
Bye now.
Bye.
Jeremy calling from Vermont. And we'll just keep it rolling real quick and go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob, it's Andy.
Hey, Andy.
Happy seasonings.
Merry seasonings.
Really? Cassie's something else, isn't she?
Yeah, she really, really is. That was
She's my hero.
That was an excellent call, and I got your note earlier today, and I thought you put it very, very well.
Yeah, I couldn't believe she said that. It just kind of blew my mind. Gee whiz. If that's a survivor, we should all be survivors. But I know she's had a rough life. But
yeah, in the note.
Wonderful for her.
In the note, and I've got it here, you said, I took umbrage at her comment about being a survivor. That was the understatement of the year. She's made such tremendous strides against all odds, an amazing person. And then I love this line you used, Andy. She has been selected to succeed. And I think you're right. I think you're absolutely right.
Well, you know, when you get that Princeton name behind you, God, there's a lot of momentum there.
Oh, yeah.
No question. A lot of momentum. They want you to succeed. I mean, it reflects well on their whole program. That's the whole gig. And she's got that momentum. She's just got to stick with it. It looks like she's got the brains to do it, and certainly the courage and the tenacity. It's wonderful.
And it seems like her values are still completely intact, and that's a huge thing too.
Oh, boy, you got that right. Remember where you came from, for sure. Don't forget us, and that's the problem with so many.
Yeah, and she doesn't take any crap. She doesn't take any crap about wearing her cowboy boots anymore either. So that means, yeah, there's some real starch there.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Hey, and a shout out to Albert, the sage of southwestern Wisconsin, on the new boy.
Albert and Renee, as we were reminded.
Yeah.
Yeah, Renee did have a little bit to do with it, you know.
Just a little, I'm sure. And Albert, when you spoke to him too, made a statement about the bankers.
Yeah.
Something about them, you know, that they were so important and they worked so hard. And HSBC. A while back, I read a comment. I don't know if you know, in Britain, they have a new head of the Anglican Church.
Yes.
I think it used to be Bishop Rowan that was there that retired. And now they got a new... new guy, I think his name is Welty or something, or Welby, I guess. And he's actually pretty cool because he has really been easy, not in the House of Commons. What is the chosen?
Oh, the House of Lords?
Ones in the Parliament, yeah. They made him a member of the House of Lords.
Yeah, he's a peer.
Prior to him even getting the archbishopship or, taking over the Anglican Church. I guess it's Justin Welby is his name. But he made a comment, a quote, and I thought it was pretty good. He said, many bankers before the 2008 crash were working very long hours, but they had no socially useful purpose. A court should order that their crimes be published on their letterhead and paper with everything they send out.
Oh, he's gonna be real popular.
Well, he's already made it quite clear. He has no love loss for the whole financial system, which is good. I wish we had somebody like that here in the religious industrial complex.
Sadly, there are those out in the religion industrial complex who are like that, but they are so unlistened to as to be unnameable.
Right. Oh, Welton Gaddy is one that gets out there in front of it a lot. And you're right, there are a few others. But I heard a guy from the Anglican Church actually give a speech in Washington when I was there for a demonstration a few years back, and it blew my mind. He was so on top of it. And at that time, the Iraq War was still going full bore. But you know, you'll never hear about him in the mainstream press, right?
No. No, because, of course, the mainstream press is owned by the guys that, well, you know how it works out.
Right. I think his name was Thompson or something like that, a minister or bishop or something. You know, I sent you an email. You know, one thing that really bugs me, you know, even though we're kind of moving forward, although not with all this, you know, propaganda with the deals going on in Washington, the fiscal cliff baloney.
Mm-hmm.
But this whole filibuster thing just blows, and I think I sent you an email on, but it just blows my mind. It blows my mind how the Republicans, and again, to hammer on the false equivalency that the mainstream media always pulls. The New York Times has put a few articles out, you know, on the gridlock situation. I think I sent you an article of filibusters and debate curbs, and I think there was another one, Senate's long slide to gridlock.
Yeah,
but they
I read those.
Claim, it kills me how these MFers in the corporate media, New York Times in particular, tries to put the blames on both sides. You know, it's this false equivalency, baloney, BS, when there's one party.
But they've been
destroying.
And the problem, Andy, is that they have been conditioned to it.
Right. Just one. I mean, it's clear. When you go from 1917 to 1970, right, like 53 years, and you average two filibusters per year, and then during Obama's term, you know, to stop the black man from doing anything, getting anything possibly done, you have 387 filibusters in three terms, right? It's an amazing statistic how the Republicans have just stopped anything from getting done for the citizenry of this country, for the 1%. They've just stopped everything with this filibuster. And during LBJ's three terms, for comparison, there was one filibuster when LBJ was head of the Senate compared to Harry Reid, who should have his ass back in some place in Las Vegas or Nevada somewhere.
Well, speaking of Harry Reid, we learned a nasty bit of business over the weekend. I saw this just last night after I got home. Have you read anything about this provision inside the Affordable Care Act about firearms?
No.
Well, it turns out there's a provision inside the Affordable Care Act that prevents any health care provider from inquiring as to the presence of firearms in the home or firearm ownership by anyone in any capacity in the course and scope of doing medical work.
So they took that right out of ALEC, right out of the Florida.
Well, no, actually, that was the first thing I thought of too, Andy. But no, that's not quite how it played out. The National Republican Association, the National Rifle Association went to Harry Reid and told him they wanted that language, and Harry Reid had it inserted in the legislation.
Oh, Jesus. What a wimp. What baloney. And you were talking about that the other night, too. I don't know this particular situation, but you were talking to, you know, about how that mental illness when you were talking with Cassie, and that having guns in the home, that's a hazard, man. If that gun, that nut in Connecticut doesn't show that, it's a hazard, and especially when there are drugs involved. Having guns is,
I got to thinking about it in a different context today too. Just like the goober in Indiana here, who it turns out was not, you know, it wasn't because he had guns, it was because he was a Fox News viewer. And that's under the standard that the NRA wants enunciated. Apparently they didn't call Rupert Murdoch to get his take on this stuff before they announced it. But, you know, along those same lines, you remember the Son of Sam killer?
Sure.
David Berkowitz, wasn't that his name?
David Berkowitz, right.
And when they finally caught him, it turned out he was crazier than a run-over snake. because he informed people very sincerely that he was receiving his orders from his dog.
Yes.
Now, we didn't run out and start looking into who should own dogs. We looked at how he got a handgun inside New York City. Right? So that kind of takes the starch out of the NRA's argument, doesn't it? I mean, a lot of people have pointed out that there was an entire police force at Virginia Tech University. There were armed guards at Columbine. And, you know, Fort Hood is one big armed encampment. And all the guns in the world didn't stop any of those horrors.
And you get that right. You can go into a military base and pull that off with the most highly armed. If you get the drop on somebody, there's nothing you can do. Doesn't matter what you got.
Unless, of course, you are making it harder for them to have weapons.
I think I sent you an email. You look at the Port Arthur killing in Australia in 1996. When that dude killed 35 people with the same type of rifle, an AR-15 look-alike, and you know the damage those bullets do. They just ground out your organs once it enters your body. And he killed that many people. Well, the Australians, in a couple weeks' time, had a bill before their legislature, and they had an exchange program, brought in 650,000 guns, assault weapons, were hauled in. And since 1996, they've had zero, zilch, nada, mass shootings. None. They did an exchange program, brought the guns in, they did some other things.
Well, the one thing I'd like to know, and maybe
you... can't do that here.
Maybe either someone in the Australian audience, or maybe you know, or someone else in the horn knows, is it illegal, is it criminal, is it a criminal offense now to possess those weapons?
I don't.
Because if
I
you can't
know.
Buy them, and there was a buyback, see, the thing that keeps troubling...
don't have them, but you can do so many other things. You could just keep the clips low. You could do some other things to try to disarm, make it so those guns just can't shoot as many shots. I mean, so many things just to make it so they're more for sport and not for hunting people. In a military type of context. I mean, just to keep that clip low, that magazine, from being able to spew out that many shots without a delay.
And that seems to be, if there's some common ground to be found, I saw Kay Bailey Hutchison, you know, not exactly the paragon of gun control. She's retiring, of course, so she's safe from the NRA now. But talking with Bob Schieffer or whomever yesterday.
SS Colonel Schieffer, that is. From a great line of SS colonels, yes.
Former.
Bob Schieffer.
Yeah. Former palace scribe to Ashurbanipal III, old Bob Schieffer. She agreed with him about the high capacity clips, and then they had Mark Warner in the studio from Virginia, of course, who said, well, my girls came home from college, and they said, Daddy, you work up there. What are you going to do about it? You know, as if he works up there. Mark Warner's a freaking multimillionaire, you know. He's drawing his breath and his pay, Andy. What are you going to do about it, Daddy? And so that seemed to be his focus, too, was the high-capacity magazines. But you know, that would be a start. But what I'm getting at is that after you've done a buyback and after you've criminalized the future, or after you've, you know, yeah, made illegal the future sale of the damn things, what do you do about the ones that are still in the home? Because
they do an exchange, so I don't know if that exchange was mandatory or voluntary or not.
I want to pay above fair market value for all these things.
Yeah.
But after the buyback has ended, it seems to me that you have to have a provision that says, and if you're caught with one of these things, you are going away for a real long time.
Hey, we got that prison industrial complex. They're not going to be able to put the potheads away anymore. We got plenty of space. Let's get some of these gun-toting freaks in there. They're the real criminals and threats to our society. let's put some of those dudes in jail for a while. Maybe they'll get the message that you don't need to have an assault weapon for walking around time.
Yeah, because, you know, going after a loaf of bread at midnight down to the Rippy Mart, that's one of those escape from New York snake situations, right?
Exactly. Well, anyway, you got a lot of horn users, horn listeners in Australia. Somebody maybe can clue us in on what exactly that... I heard in New Jersey that Christie or something just had a voluntary exchange program of assault weapons, and they got many more weapons than they thought.
Oh, yeah. There was a huge turn-in.
Right. You know, with a lot of people, too, I would think, God, it's maybe just a fetish. They buy these guns because they have an interest in it, and then they find out it's not a big deal anymore. You know, they lose interest, and they still have the gun. Now, what are you going to do with it? You know, if you don't want to hand it down to your 5-year-old kid, and if you have kids, like you say, you don't really want guns around anyway because they're dangerous as hell. So what do? I mean, that's great. Have an exchange program. Maybe even throw some money in on the top of it. Give people an incentive. And get rid of them.
Yeah, I mean, what would it cost us? A few billion dollars? We lose that in the cracks between the cushions and the Pentagon sofa.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, another thing, I sent you an email that I was amazed Obama on the 14th did a little Miami radio show, and because I think they mentioned that he was a socialist because he had a Cuban and Venezuelan audience, that he had to tell people, well, I'm a 1980s Republican.
Yeah, I caught, yeah. Oh.
Today, I'd be a 90s, and he's proud to say, he's, you know, I would never in a million years make that kind of assertion. I mean, just for him to even say that just galls me. God, he just can't get over himself.
Well, this is the guy who took the Reagan biography to the beach with him.
Right.
It's a pity he didn't take the Kitty Kelly biography.
He just wants to project himself as a Republican. It just galls me. I just can't wait to tell my DFA friends who are on my case for not voting for Obama. Like, oh, you just voted for a Republican. And you're like, hey, he's a 1980s Republican. Good job. Very good. And you were talking about Richard Bourque, too, you know, who passed away.
Yeah.
I was amazed. I think I might have sent you the article, but it's amazing that he was the guy that actually fired Archibald Cox.
Yes, he was.
For Nixon.
The so-called Saturday Night Massacre of the Watergate era. Of course, that was back when the...
Richardson wouldn't do it.
Right.
His AG wouldn't do it. His deputy under him wouldn't do it, but they got to Bourque. He had no problem.
Bourque said, I'm your boy.
Anything you want. Archibald's gone. Yeah, so that was one of his claim to fame.
Well, see, Bourque, I suspect, figured that if he could save the president would then reward him with the next open seat on the Supreme Court. But he had to wait until the Reagan administration.
Right.
And by then, having been the guy who tried to save Richard Nixon's bacon, was not a character plus.
Well, he was too honest with the press. You know, he didn't do the full court turnabout that today's justices deal with. They deny everything, and they try to hide their true opinions on anything. And hope they don't have some kind of audit trail where they did actually make an opinion on something. So, but he was just too honest about it, and they hung him. Anyway, the Republicans got what they got. Slappy Thomas, and they got Alito, you know, the fascist, the true unadulterated fascist on the court. And I that's what galls me about the Democrats, how they could ever have let those two, and then Alito on top of that, and Robert on top of that. And here you have this filibuster that the Republicans use in infinitum, going, and the Democrats just can't bring themselves. And now we have a true fascist on the court. Truly. You can even say two fascists with Slappy Thomas and Scalia.
Well, I'm not too sure. I'm not too sure how far Alito is from them.
Right, Alito might be there too because his voting record is actually, I think, as bad as the other two, if not worse. The guy has never sided on the moderate side of the court.
I wonder a little bit, and I know this is entirely speculative, Andy. But I wonder a little bit if John Roberts is beginning to look around at his nearest ideological compadres and getting a little tired of the crazy.
You know, what I don't understand about those guys is they have to live in our society. They have to walk amongst us. And I'll tell you, if I ever saw them, I'd spit on them. I literally would. If I could, if I was in spitting range, I would spit on them.
Yeah, but you know what? You say that
to me, they are not part of my society.
No, and they don't. And they don't move
in our culture, our whole country. They are destroying it.
But they don't. They don't move in our culture. I mean, and I say this. I say this.
They don't get in spitting range.
I say this as somebody who has lived for a few months now, from time to time, literally right next door to the Supreme Court of the United States.
Right.
You never see them.
Right, they have such cloistered lives, and the people that they associate with are not, the hoi polloi. We don't go near.
Yeah, the folks that, if you don't know what
they
the...
They do have to give speeches once in a while, and get out in front of law groups at universities and stuff. You know, even to do that in public, God, you're going to get some pushback, you would hope.
But, we see what that amounts to when... the students at Princeton, of course, take issue with Fat Tony for saying what a statement to make. I mean, this would horrify the framers, and him being originalist and all, when he said, "My Constitution is dead, 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 dead."
Yeah, strict Reconstructionist or whatever.
And of course, like I said, Robert Bork was kind of the ideological father of that bastardy. The idea that the Constitution is to be somehow interpreted only within the scope of some imagineering of...
living, breathing document. Forget that. Being practical.
But anybody with a half a brain, how can you know what was in the mind of James Madison, Alexander Hamilton, and that lot?
Right.
I mean, granted, they wrote extensively in the Federalist Papers, but one of the things that I've learned over the course of these years with Dr. Bill and the PRISM program is that the Federalist Papers were not intellectual dialogues and debates. They were propaganda pieces in order to, excoriate the Articles of Confederation, and B, sell people on the notion of ratification of the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
And the proof positive comes in the fact that anybody who dared criticize the Constitution was immediately vilified with all manner of calumny.
Right.
One very smart guy from Maryland, I can't remember his name, raised some issues, and the next thing you know, the pro-Constitution forces were putting it out there that he was a hopeless drunk and was not to be trusted, could not be trusted with the body of a dead skunk.
Nothing changed.
That much is true.
Attack that messenger. Man, just attack the character. So then they have no credibility. Beautiful.
And so, consequently, to try to look inside their minds and to engage in the hubris of thinking that we have that power is nothing short of ridiculous.
The basic thing is that was written... in 1789, 200 years ago, how could they possibly contemplate what the future would be like and what the world is like now? I mean, just the size difference in our population and the modern society, I mean, it's so out of kilter, you have to be practical.
Well, within 15 years, in terms of
contemplate what it would be like now.
In terms of real American history, Andy, within 15 years, most of everything that Madison, Adams, Franklin, Jefferson, that whole lot, most everything that they thought about the future of the United States was over. It was done. the acquisition of the Louisiana Purchase was arguably unconstitutional. But it was done anyway. And with that expansion, you've got Jefferson sitting there writing notes about how the Louisiana Purchase would expand the territorial confines of the United States sufficient to populate this country, in his words, unto the thousandth generation. But within 15 years, it would all be up in smoke thanks to Aaron Burr, who took a little adventure down the Mississippi River that absolutely turned everything in this country on its head.
Yeah.
Regardless of what he did or did not intend to do.
Some of the forefathers did actually try to take things from the Iroquois, you know, the Indian nations. The Iroquois, the Mohawks, and whatnot.
Yeah, but
you know, the 7 year, and I know you've done a lot of work with the Indian nations, and we're talking about that tonight, but it was a whole different philosophy about the future generations and what effect the actions you have today, which is totally devoid of a lot of these politicians and a lot of our industrialists. They don't care. They just want it now.
Oh, absolutely. Look at the response of the Koch brothers to the idea of a relief bill for the victims of Sandy.
Talk about people who have none.
They have the Koch brothers have literally told the victims of that storm to suck it up.
Right. Tough. You're on your own, baby, in their world. God, you know what kills me about the... It'd be one thing if those MFers were self-made men. But both of those scumbags inherited $330 million from the old man and a total gas empire on top of that, you know, with a cash flow and the whole infrastructure already built and just ready to expand. $330 million bucks apiece. And, of course, they grew it into $22 billion a pop. But these guys were given everything they never had to work for an effing thing. And their attitude towards life, you know, towards our planet, towards future generations, it is just beyond my comprehension how they don't care. You know, it is everybody on your own doggy dog. And these guys never had a... their greed is so immense and so incredible, it's hard to fathom. You know, they have no sympathy, no empathy for any creature on this planet. Nothing. It's all about them. God, it's an amazing thing to behold, these two. And they spend all their time just trying to destroy, bake the planet and destroy the lives of working people. That's all they care about, is destroying lives. What a way to go through life, these two.
Well, check this out.
This
creepy dude named Steve Lonergan is the head of Americans for Prosperity, which is, of course, the Koch front group,
right,
in New Jersey. He said the bill to provide relief for the damages caused by Sandy was a disgrace, and then he went on to say, quote, "This is not a federal government responsibility. We need to suck it up and be responsible for taking care of ourselves." Now, I've got a New York Times story that just horrified me from a few days ago about an 80-year-old World War II veteran who died terrified and alone on some upper story of an apartment in the Bronx. Now, how do the Koch brothers and how does this Lonergan creep propose that he take care of himself? He's dead. And he died because he wasn't, because he received no, you know, he died that libertarian death, trying to pull himself up by his own bootstraps at the age of greater than 80 years old, in the middle of an absolutely failed system. And yet this dirty bastard says it's a disgrace that we're going to try to put some money into a situation where you've got people who are still really, no kidding, honest to God, homeless. I mean, what does this say? What does this say, Andy, about what they think of our nation? What they think? Because our nation, if we understand the Constitution, our nation is not a piece of geography. Our nation is, in fact, we the people, right?
Right. We're supposed to be promoting the general welfare of we the people. And there's no sense of community with these people. None whatsoever. No sense of promoting the general welfare. It's just their own welfare. And that's it. Everybody else's welfare can go to hell. But that's not what we're supposed to be built on. You know, we're supposed to be built on helping each other and doing things and having programs and policies that uplift everybody. Not just them, but it's all about them. That's it. Holding on to their money.
And getting more of ours if they can.
Right. You too, I think you've mentioned capital gains a couple of times, and just a note, you know, if this fiscal cliff goes through, the capital gains on the highest tax bracket does automatically go to 20% from 15, and the dividends, which Bush pulled with his big Bush tax holiday and break that he did in like 2001, he took the dividends out of ordinary income down to a 15% rate too, and that goes away, and that goes back into ordinary income, which would be good, which would just happen automatically if we...
Well, I know there's some nasty stuff in the in what Charlie Pierce calls the gently sloping fiscal incline. But where's the real live, no kidding, honest to God downside for working Americans, apart from a modest tax increase?
It's not a cliff. It's a gradual, like you just said, it's a gradual slope. You know, as time goes on throughout the year, that's when the hit really takes. And it's not going to happen right away in January or February or March. They're talking about the whole year if nothing gets done and nothing changes and the big austerity programs kick in and the payroll tax tax break goes away and, you know, all the taxes hit. I mean, that's the whole year impact, so... There's no rush to this at all.
So if the Republican Congress is seen as, or the Republican House is seen as the primary impediment to solving some of those problems that happen a little further down the road, then isn't the obvious choice to get the hell rid of them in 2014 and fix things? I mean, I hate to just politicize it, but it's political, isn't it?
Well, everything's political, right, as they say. But they could wait till then. But the thing that bothers me is we're in an austerity program, no matter what anybody says. We've been in an austerity program because of the cuts. And I know Jim could probably relate to this more than anybody because of what's happened to the federal workers. You know, federal workers have been let go. Teachers have been let go. Local, usually when you have a... during a recessionary period, the government picks up the slack and actually hires people and tries to put people to work. But instead, the government has doubled down and made matters 10 times worse because Obama's not a fighter. No courage there. No red badge of courage with Mr. Obama. He's gone right along with the Republicans and he's cut federal workers and they've cut teachers. They've cut local and state workers, you know, to the tune of 700,000, I think, since he's been in office, over a million, I think, since the recession started. So we've got no boost from that. So we're pure austerity. You know, of course, the stimulus program he ran wasn't nearly good enough and had a lot of tax breaks in it, in my mind, do just about nothing. Because
and you know, of course,
corporations are already sitting on tons of money. So are the rich people.
And if they're going to sit on it, well, tax it.
You give them more tax breaks, it's going to do nothing. And time and time again, we've proven that higher tax rates on the rich are actually good for an economy because the government, I say, can put money back to work in infrastructure projects much better than the rich people can, investing in China or that piece of work. Mitt Romney, who puts all kind of money into China, that's what the rich people do. They invest overseas. They invest internationally. They invest in the Bahamas and the Cayman Islands. Get that money out of that and get it back here, and we'll put it, and the government will put it into infrastructure projects, and that will grow our economy. So come on.
Well, and I mean, it seems to me that instead of creating tax breaks, make it more expensive to hang on to the money. Therefore, the rich put their money back into the economy. And lo and behold, just as we saw during the Clinton administration, what happens? They get richer. They actually get richer when they have tax incentives to not sit on their cash.
And when demand increases, when the economy, when the GDP does take off, the rich people are always the ones that benefit the most anyway. They always are.
For the now, the big thing that
more
is...
More things to fix the...
The one thing that is disturbing out of all of this, and Waggy points it out in the chat room, is that unemployment payments end rather... Well, not rather, they end suddenly for a lot of people.
Yeah, 2 million people.
Yeah, and that's brutal.
Right. Yeah, for people that are on the edge. That hurts. That's going to hurt demand. Something else I want to bring up, too, of course, you've known about that Palestinian vote for observer status.
Right.
Got 138 yes votes in the General Assembly, I believe, and 41 abstained, and there were 9 no votes. And again, the United States is one of the 9. Doesn't that take big brass, you know, with Israel? You know, why can't we? We just can't get with the civilized world, you know, to get behind what the rest of the world knows that real justice is. 138 votes against us. And here we are, you know, an outlier again.
Right.
One of
the by the way, you got an amen, and being as how it's Christmas Eve, about a hallelujah from Isaac. He said, thank God or the non-God for Andy. Tell it like it is, Andy, about Obama.
Yeah. Yeah, of course, I didn't want to be that harsh on Christmas Eve, unfortunately.
Well,
but
repeating facts is not being harsh.
Yeah.
And when somebody says, I would have been a Republican, yeah, look, there is no point in time, and this is just the truth. Maybe it's why I'm not president. No, there's probably other stuff. But there's never been a time when I would have been a Republican.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Just never. Never. There's never been... And that's why, you know, when I used to get crap from right-wingers over in Beckley, I would say, listen, you know, I'm open-minded. I look at every candidate on my ballot, but I have yet to see a Republican run for office who shared even a plurality, let alone a majority, of my views. Now, the problem comes when neither the Democrat nor the Republican share so much as a plurality, let alone a majority of your views. Then you, right. You know, then you get into trouble.
Well, what totally blows my mind about this guy, Mr. Obama, is that he has gotten so much garbage and dirt and utter abuse from these Republicans. They've thrown everything at him, and he still won't come back and just tell them to go F themselves and get the heck out of the way. I mean, that would be, I would do that, I would have done that so quick and just come to the conclusion, hey, you cannot work with me. They want me out. They want me removed. They're not going to work with me. They're going to do everything, and they have, they've done everything to undermine him.
Well, did you notice that Wall Street, Wall Street Journal passage?
It's an amazing thing to watch. I could not do it. It's not in me. It's not like me. I'd be more like a Roosevelt. Let's admit it. These guys hate my guts, and let's tell the American people that. They're not going to work with me. The only thing you can do is have the American people try to change the views of these Republicans and get on their case.
Well, did you see the threat? Threat. Come on. It was reported in the Wall Street Journal that at one point, Obama looked at Boehner and said, listen, if we don't get a deal, I'm going to use my State of the Union and inauguration speech to tell the American people that the reason we don't have a deal is because of the Republican Party. At which point...
I don't believe he's even threatening them with that. Just do it. Just freaking do it.
Right. I mean, why give that away?
What are you asking? What are you even telling him that for? Just do it, man.
The thing about... Has any Speaker of the House been rendered entirely impotent faster than John Boehner? I mean, in the entire history of the country, I don't know the history of the speakership, but it's clear that he has almost no influence whatsoever with any of his caucus. You know, it's kind of like what Sandra said the other night. you know, maybe the answer to this now is to start calling Republicans and say, oh, no, no tax hikes. I won't sit still for having the taxes raised, so that they would kill the so-called fiscal cliff negotiations. Because they're, are they coming back a couple of days from now? Is this bullshit going to continue until December the 31st?
I believe so. I believe it just continues.
And see, some of this is
$1 million gig. You know, that's his plan. That was his plan B, and he can't even get that passed. And there's no question; these guys are so intransigent, you know, so immovable in their no taxes bent.
Because yesterday,
there was increase in income taxes. Period. That's the way too many of these House members feel.
Yesterday, in his conversation with the palace scribe to King Ashurbanipal III, Mark Warner said, and the question was, and I couldn't believe how just really tacky this was. Along the way, Schieffer looked at him and said, "Well, okay, we've been talking about these guns and these little dead kids. Enough of that shit. Tell me, Senator Warner, are we going to get past the fiscal cliff?" And Mark Warner said, "Well, I think we are. We're coming back. I think we're going to get something.
Yeah, we're going to get sold out." You know what kills me too is how Mr. Vice President there was running around during that convention making these statements that we wouldn't touch Social Security and we weren't going to touch Medicare. I mean, those things are sacrosanct. You know, holier than thou. You know, this wouldn't happen, you know, according to Joe Biden. And here he is now toning down his rhetoric, you know, trying to ease it in that this is what Obama's going to do to get the Republicans. And, you know, I wrote people after the election. I got emails from overseas, and they asked me, you know, was I happy, what happened? And I go, yeah, well, it's the best result we could have hoped for. And yeah, they particularly ask, well, will anything get done? Will there still be gridlock? And I go, the best we could hope for is gridlock. When you have 30 House seats in the Republican hands, nothing's going to happen. They're teabaggers. It's loaded with teabaggers. There's nothing going to happen. All I can hope for is that nothing happens. We just hold the line. Because if there's any compromise, we lose. We will lose because the Democrats will sell out the working class. All I would hope for is gridlock. That's my best-case scenario, Bob. Is that nothing happens. I don't want anything to happen. I don't want any compromise. You know, and that's all you hear from the corporate media and guys like SS Colonel Schieffer. And the reason I say that is there was a true SS Colonel Schieffer who rock and rolled through my ancestral company of Slovakia, taking partisans and gunning them down and throwing their bodies down wells all over Slovakia while the Russians were mounting an attack, you know, to come through while the partisans were hitting him in the rear lines. There was actually an SS Colonel Schieffer who was running around with the partisans on his rear end, you know, trying to gun down his SS group, although the SS group were hanging and killing and murdering and slaughtering, you know, civilian Slovakians. It was a true SS Colonel Schieffer, so that's actually why I say that. And he was well known. There were even memorials to where he killed partisans, you know, and raped and pillaged the citizenry, you know, in his terror campaign to try to hold off the partisans in Slovakia on the rear lines behind the German lines. But anyway, all I can hope for is that there's no compromise and nothing gets done. Because they're going to sell us out. Any compromise is a sellout. And the corporate media just wants that compromise. They want that sellout because the stock market's going to go up. And that's what Wall Street wants, too. They want the compromise. There's no skin off their back because they're all the top 1%.
And that's what scares me, Andy, because I just asked, you know, I asked the question a minute ago, why not wait till 2014? And that was kind of a loaded question when I asked it, because what scares the piss out of me is that in 2014, something similar might be proposed and sail through the House and Senate and get signed.
Yeah, the only thing we could hope
because
for
you've always got blue dogs to worry about.
Yeah, we got to get back to House.
Well, no, that's what I'm saying. Let's assume we get back the House. Nancy, would Nancy Pelosi sign on to this? I was in the chat room just a few minutes ago, and I saw where our buddy
Tom... She wants compromise.
Well, no, listen, I mean, dig this, dig this.
She's looking for compromise.
I think you'll find this interesting. I was in the... I was looking in the chat room a few minutes ago, and I saw an article that Jug of Punch had posted. The headline on it is, "Why did Campaign for America's Future remove an article against Social Security cuts?" And it was, based on what I could gather from it, sort of critical of Nancy Pelosi.
Well deserved.
It was an article that basically called in. It called. Listen. Here's what he writes. This is what apparently got the article pulled. Ask a Democrat on Social Security, which side are you on? This is a moment of moral clarity. Right now, there are only two sides in the Social Security debate. The side that says it's acceptable to cut benefits in a way that raises taxes for all income except the highest, and the side that says it isn't. It's time to ask our leaders and ourselves a simple question. Which side are you on? Nancy Pelosi says she can convince most congressional Democrats to stick with the president as he pursues his gratuitous and callous plan to cut Social Security benefits as a part of a deficit deal, even though Social Security does not contribute to the deficit. And that's why I asked the question that I just asked, Andy. Assume for a moment that there's a Democratic House in 2014. Only Nixon can go to China, right?
Well, they're trying to push that chain-link CPI, right, the COLA, right, the cost of living adjustment. And they're trying to make, and I know guys like Joe Biden and Anthony, they'll try to make that case that that's really not a cut. You know, they'll give us this propaganda that it is a cut, but they're going to try to tell us it's not a cut. And that's the way I think they'll try to sell it.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. You know, we keep talking about, are we out of the woods? Or I keep asking, are we out of the woods? And as far as I can tell, it's woods as far as the eye can see.
Right. I'm not happy. And, you know, Obama won, great. But we're still in the same hole. When you have a Republican state, and you've got the blue dogs. Just a quick story. You know, Amy Barra won a big seat against SS Colonel Dan Lundgren, who is a knuckle dragger among knuckle draggers.
Oh, yeah.
Now, this guy stands out. I mean, the people that hang around him are the guys in the black leather jackets that have SS on their collars. So those are the guys that are his staffers. Now, that's SS Colonel Dan. Well, anyway, he got taken out by Amy Barra. And one of my friends in PDA down the SAC area was talking to him, you know, after he won the election, got a hold of him, and he goes, "Amy, you promised you were going to join the Progressive Caucus when you got in. How about it? You know, you ready to join?" And he goes, "I'll have to think about it."
Nice.
"I'll have to think about it." And you knew there was a guy who ran twice against Dan Lundgren before this Amy Barra did. And he was a ex-Vietnam vet. And he's a doctor. And now I can't remember. Bill Thurston was his name, and he was really good. He was a real progressive, you know, a real guy who was going to stand up for the working class and progressive issue. But he lost twice, and he could not get funding from the DNC. They would not fund him to take on, well, this time around, and Amy Barrett, I think this is actually his second time running against Lundgren, but Debbie Wasserman Schultz came through big time for him, and they made a real national effort to try to get him in, and gave him big funding. And I think that's the co-option of him as a candidate, even though I think he might have been pretty blue dogish anyway, no matter, because a lot of my friends were saying they didn't trust him, that his background and everything else just didn't lend itself as him being, although he's supposed to be a single-payer guy, but we'll see. A lot of, Obama was supposed to be a single-payer guy too at one time, but a lot of people didn't trust him on the progressive side. And when you see Debbie Wasserman Schultz, you know, who is a real blue dog, that's who, she's a Rahm Emanuel acolyte. When you see somebody like that giving money to somebody, you got a question. There's a reason. There's got to be a quid pro quo for that. And that's the thing. A lot of Democrats who get in, they're not going to be on our side, unfortunately. And that's scary.
And that's why I say I think it's woods as far as the eye can see. Andy, I hope you have a good and happy holiday
remainder of the evening and into tomorrow.
Great. Same to you, Bob, and all the rest of the family, and especially Mr. Albert on the newborn. That's wonderful.
Yeah.
I wish I had his faith in the future, man.
little Lido's first Christmas. That's very cool.
That's wonderful.
Yeah. Well, Andy, have yourself a good evening, my friend. Thanks for the conversation.
All right. Merry, happy holidays, huh?
Indeed.
Good seasonings.
Yes, indeed. Thanks. Bye.
And Kathy, kick some donkey this year, huh?
Absolutely. Later. Our good friend Andy calling from California. Listen, we're going to take a little break. Happy news to report. A couple of notes from our buddy Robert in Australia. First of all, he answers Andy's question. And he says, after the Port Arthur shootings in Australia, surveys showed that up to 85% of Australians supported gun control, but some farmers and sporting shooters strongly opposed the new laws. So, restricted weapons now in Australia. Machine guns, rocket launchers, assault rifles, flamethrowers, anti-tank guns, howitzers, artillery, etc., can be owned by collectors in some states, provided that those weapons have been rendered permanently inoperable. They are subject to the same storage and licensing requirements as fully functioning firearms. You cannot own an assault rifle in Australia. It's illegal. So if you're found with one, you'll be charged. But Robert says, I don't know what the sentence would be. So yeah, there is a criminal possession element to it. And that's got to be a part of any solution here. Meanwhile, Robert also kicked in, you've got a Christmas present from Australia. It's already Christmas Day there. Happy Christmas, Robert. Thank you. And that means that, tonight's fundraising goal has been reduced by a third. That means we just need 10 folks at $10 a piece. And that's not counting the hole we got into with Friday last week. So any help over at the PayPal button is much appreciated. Much appreciated indeed. I'm going to take a little break real quick, just because I got to get a little Christmas music in here somehow. And Jim reminded me of something, and Lord knows, I love the Johnny Mathis Christmas album. I love the Nat King Cole Christmas album. I love the standards, Sleigh Ride, all of that stuff. But when you get off the beaten path a little bit, it's extra nice too. And Jim reminded me of this beautiful rendition of The Little Drummer Boy by Marlena Dietrich. Bet you're not going to hear this anywhere else. I always get my German articles confused. Der Trommelmann. Happy Christmas, everybody.
Hört ihr Leute, param, papapam. Kommt alle her, geschwind, param, papapam. Zum neuen Königskind, param, papapam. Bringt ihm das Beste, all, param, papapam, ram, papapam, ram, papapam. Lauf auch du zum Stall, param, papapam, kleiner Trommelmann. Lieber König, param, papapam. In kalter Winternacht, param, papapam. Hab euch nichts mitgebracht, param, papapam. Nicht Gold und Edelstein, param, papapam, ram, papapam, ram, papapam. Nur mein Lied allein, param, papapam. Hört mich doch an. Und der spielte Bam, 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 bam. Der kleine Trommelmann, bam, 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 bam. Das Christkind seinen voran, bam, bam, bam. Und lachte ihm dann zu, bam, 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 bam. Spiel nur weiter du, bam, 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 kleiner Trommelmann. Nur weiter du, Paran, Paran, kleine Trommelmann.
At Jim's request, Marlena Dietrich, the Trommelmann. The little drummer boy, Auf Deutsch. Neat. Let's go to Skype. I think Kevin's still with us. You there, Kevin?
Yes, I am.
Well, how do you do?
I sound good. How do I sound?
Pretty good for the moment.
Good, good. First of all, before I forget, I think it was Andy or someone said you were going up in the tune-in ratings.
Ray wrote that in, yeah.
Where is it that you would find those ratings? Link to that?
I have no idea. I really don't. I have no idea whatsoever. Because, well, looking for ratings and numbers and stuff like that has always struck me as being a little bit of a violation of my ninth grade curtain peeping rule. From that when I was told the story about the first high school play I was ever in. The director caught me and said, if I ever catch you looking out to see the size of the audience again, you'll never be in another piece that I do. So I don't look at that kind of stuff. I just get, you know, I just try to do this. I don't know. But he said, I don't know. I guess it was under progressives or whatever.
Yeah. I have to look around on the tune-in side, and I apologize for my voice. I'm kind of hoarse all of a sudden. This has been something coming and going here with us. So, are you still there?
Yes.
Okay, there we go. You know, what you and Andy were talking about just really upsets me from the standpoint. I'm part of a group called the White House Disability Group, and I mentioned this before, and I've never seen the president do anything. He's always, that group has always been taken care of. The calls are off the record, of course, but he's always had someone on his staff, and I'm talking about senior level staff, come into that call and talk about whatever is on the minds of people that particular month. And I really find it hard to believe that he would give in to any cuts to Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid. Particularly that COLA increase, you know, they're trying to sell that as no cut. If you live on Social Security, you know it's a big cut because we're already behind. The 1.7% increase we got this year, because I get that increase, my food stamps got dropped by $7. Now, that doesn't sound like a whole lot, but for someone less fortunate than me, that's a lot of meals because they're living off $1, $2 a day in meals. And I just, if the Democrats or the president do any cuts to Social Security at all, I will drop out of the Democratic Party. I've already got the paperwork for it. I'm just going to sit here and see what happens because, you know, listening to you two talk, I think the biggest, it's one thing to have, say, a Republican congressman like we have in Doug Lamborn. You know what you're getting. But when you have a supposed progressive congressperson, in this case, I'll use Bennett, our Congressman Bennett here in the Colorado, Senator from Colorado, he could not commit the other day when I called to not having any cuts to Social Security and Medicaid. And I just feel like we're so betrayed when people that we worked hard, and Bennett, I did not work hard for. I had no use for him when he got elected. But when we work hard like we did to get the president elected and several of these other progressive candidates, and then to see them do that to us, just leaves me with such an outraged sense of betrayal that when it comes to election time in 2 years, I don't know that I could even vote Democrat anymore.
Well, that's the thing that scares me, Kevin, is this and we throw it around kind of idly, but this old saying about only Nixon could go to China, that has very real meaning. You know, if LBJ or JFK had gone to China, there are those who would have said that he was somehow knuckling under. But, you know, a nasty old vile hateful red baiter like Nixon could go to China and it meant something. Well, yep. What people mean when they say that in regard to Barack Obama and Social Security is that no one can truly and utterly dismantle the New Deal except a so-called Democrat.
Yep. But, sad to say, but I think if they try it, they're going to regret it. I think that may be the spark that wakes people up.
Well, there are two standards at work here, Kevin. One is the standard that applies to Republicans, and that standard is IOKIYAR. It's okay if you're a Republican. Case in point, you've got a Mormon bishop of some 30 years duration in the Senate of the United States named Mike Crapo of Idaho. He was recently busted for DUI, like in the last couple of days. Now we're talking about Mormons here who aren't even supposed to drink hot drinks. You know, hot coffee, hot tea. Beer, booze, scotch is right out. But he'll be okay. Because all he has to do is deeply apologize to those whom I have gravely let down, or some such treacless bullshit.
Right.
And he's okay. On the other hand, we see a photograph of Anthony Weiner's tidy whities, and he's got to leave the House of Representatives. Okay, those are the two standards at work. And I say all that as preface to the letter that Eisenhower wrote to one of his cousins back in the 1950s, whereby he said any political party that seeks to diminish or destroy Social Security will cease to be a viable political party within a generation. Well, the Republicans have been trying that all along, and they've never ceased to be a political party. But it will be the absolute death knell of a National Democratic Party because of the different standards. And it should be its death knell, you understand?
Yep. I just can't even put into words the sense that I get. Having a good deal number of people do not understand what living on Social Security disability entails. Until you live it, you don't understand it. Some people have the empathy, mostly on the progressive side, have the empathy to understand it, even if they're not living it. But these people that talk, like you talked about the old man that froze to death, and, you know, he didn't pull himself up by his bootstraps, apparently, and these people are trying to cut aid to the victims of Sandy, and it's just, my gosh, where have we come to as a country that we're not talking about helping out those who have been victimized by a superstorm, you know, And I, as far as I know, even Camille was not called a superstorm. They did, you didn't hear them say Superstorm Camille back in the 60s. So, you know, to cut aid to people who have been affected by the storm and pretty much say to them, you're on your own, and that's perfectly all right because your credo as a conservative means that people ought to pull themselves up by their bootstraps, and the top 1% don't need to have any taxes added to them because they're the job creators. You know, it's all, it's just getting to the point with the Democrats to go along with it. I have no use for them. And if it comes to that in 2014, I probably will vote anything but the two major parties. But the, you know, you agonized over it prior to this election.
Yeah, but understand, you know, Kevin, my agonizing concerned only the presidential election.
Right.
I don't know how long it's been since I voted for any member of our congressional delegation.
Yep.
Because they don't share my values. Now I'm not one of these political babies who expects absolute ideological purity from a candidate. I expect to disagree. Look, my congressman Nick Joe Ray Hall, you know, he signed onto a flag burning bill or something once, and I went, that's right. Just stupid. But mostly he gets it right, but now that he's decided that he is completely opposed to, you know, my grandchildren being able to draw a decent breath of air, well, we've parted company.
Yep.
And since he, you know, since he opposes the AIC Act, since he has done everything in his power, the man's jumped out of airplanes to prove his loyalty to the coal industry, for God's sakes.
Exactly.
At that point in time, I don't think, and this is an old trope that the Republicans used to use down south, the so-called Reagan Democrats, they'd say, I didn't leave the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party left me.
Yep.
Well, I used to make a lot of fun of that. But now I know how it actually feels. And a whole lot of people are going to feel that way if this miserable, miserable notion that we have to balance the budget of the United States on the backs of people who did no harm, that's like sending a rape victim to prison instead of the rapist.
Yep.
You know, we didn't, you didn't, people drawing Social Security disability didn't, Medicare recipients didn't, Medicaid recipients didn't, women and infant children recipients didn't, SSI recipients didn't crash this economy.
Nope. It was the top 1%.
Yeah, the money boys, the guys with the big brains and the bigger wallets. And I absolutely refuse to be a party to anything that punishes working people and people who have worked and find themselves struggling afterward for something they didn't do. I mean, I've been a parent, for God's sakes. You can't punish kid B for what kid A did, because you're going to wind up with kid A doing it again and kid B feeling like they may as well.
Exactly. But the question then is, in 2014, who do you vote for? And if you're forced ideologically to vote for a third-party candidate, will that vote then mean anything? And I think what you said before the election, when you talked about people like Jill Stein, these people show up for the presidential elections every 4 years, but you don't see them getting into the grassroots of the city, county, and state elected offices where they can build up a party and begin to make a difference. And that's what I'm looking for in 2014, is candidates who not only will run on the national level, but will run on the state level to prove that it can be done, because you've got to start on those lower levels. You know, it's stupid to say every 4 years I'm going to run as a third-party candidate for president because you're not going to have the money, you're not going to have the backing, you're not going to have the clout. And so it's got to come from the grassroots level upward to make a party. And by the same token, if these Democrats do approve any cuts to Medicare, Social Security, it will be not a grassroots thing. It will come from the top down that they've abandoned us. And when that happens, I begin to wonder where we as progressives are going to go to. And
I think we will just be left at sea, because any hopes of... Let me back up. The way third parties rise in this country is not by suddenly being there and replacing one of the two.
Right.
If we may judge anything by historical precedent, the way third parties rise, and especially interesting, is the demise of the Whigs and the rise of the Republicans. When the Whigs fell apart,
mm-hmm.
all kinds of little parties sprung up.
Right.
Until they coalesced into the Republican Party. But the Whigs had to fall apart first.
Right.
You follow me?
Yep.
So you're going to have a complete collapse of one of the two parties before a third party can step in. You can make the argument that though they did not change the name, that has already happened in the Republican Party by virtue of the teabaggers and libertarians who have taken who have turned the Republican Party into a madhouse,
right.
Absolute bedlam. The question is, do the Greens and the true progressives have enough in them or to them to do the same thing to the Democrats? And thus far, the answer has been a resounding no, because they don't have the infrastructure, and I don't know if they have the basic understanding to pull this off.
Yeah, and it's going to take that, starting at the city and county level and working your way up as a party.
I think you had some gains. You had some progressive candidates win in the elections nationally, or on statewide bases. But we do not have any kind of a progressive infrastructure built where it is desperately needed, Kevin.
Right. Exactly.
There's no progressive infrastructure. Well, I mean, no. I'm a member of a progressive group here in West Virginia. But we don't have enough members, I don't think, to have one of those old 1950s phone booth stuffing the stunts, pranks, whatever.
Well,
I think if the progressives in West Virginia rioted, we wouldn't have enough to turn over a Volkswagen.
Yeah, it's real hard to have a riot with two or three people. Another example of what I find wrong with the Democratic Party is during our state conference or caucuses, they ask for volunteers to fill various seats. And the chairs of these different seats would call you after the caucus to get you informed and so and so. I have yet to receive a call at all from anyone. No call, no email, nothing. So what it says to that person that wants to volunteer, that wants to be a part of making things better, it says to them, you're not wanted, you're not, even if it's not meant that way, it says to them, you're not wanted, you're not needed. And then the person eventually just says, okay, well, nobody called me, so that's it. And I did do the extra, go the extra mile on that and go to our chairperson here in the county and say, hey, I never received a call. I didn't just not say to myself I didn't get a call. I checked into it and told somebody I hadn't received a call. Still have not received that call. And I find that sad, you know. And I find that that's probably the biggest thing with the Democratic Party that I see wrong for all the gains we did make nationally is that the infrastructure, organizing infrastructure in the states still needs a lot of improving. And there was a lot to be said about Howard Dean's 50-state strategy that I still fiercely agree with, because in that 50-state strategy, it tells every state, you're included, you're part of this. And when you start ignoring states, whether that's a small state like Connecticut or Hawaii, that those people will know they're being ignored and won't come out and vote for your candidate when you need them to. And I dare say, had it not been for the fear of a Republican getting into office, into the highest office in the land, I bet our vote totals would have been nowhere where what they were this last election. And, you know, I don't expect it to be that way in 2016. Unless the candidate, whoever that is in 2016, is willing to implement that 50-state strategy, because, you know, you've got to get out the vote. That was what killed Romney, and that's what gave Obama a second term, is he was much better at getting out the vote. So
yeah, that's where his talent has appeared to lie. He's a great campaigner.
Yeah. But when it comes to doing, like the famous quote about him, if there's a strike somewhere, I'll put on my walking shoes and join you. Well, no one realistically expects the President of the United States to come out and join you on a picket line. But what we do expect is support from that president when there is a strike. And you've heard not a word from the Democratic Party, at least to my knowledge, with this these strikes by Walmart, not a word in support of those striking Walmart workers. And of course, in Wisconsin, we know what happened there. And so, you know, I'm hoping against hope that the president will stand firm on this and not make any cuts to Social Security. And if he does, I fear for what will happen to the party. For as much disarray as the Republicans are in, there's no reason why we as Democrats should not stand firm to our beliefs, because they're in such disarray that we can get out the vote on them still today and beat them. But if the party itself is telling you, oh, we're really kind of like sort of liberal Republicans, then I'm not going to vote for you. You know, if I wanted to vote for a Republican, I would have just soon cast my vote for a Republican. I'm not voting for a Democrat to be a Republican. And so that leaves me in 2014 with a very difficult choice of what to do if the president and the leading Democrats do give in to the Social Security cuts. Because I never have liked voting for a third party in national elections because their track record is so bad. And I hear a lot of people say, well, if everybody would vote for the third party, but that's the problem. The only way a third party gets out there and does get noticed is to have the name recognition and everything that goes along with being a major party. And I'm really sitting here and figuratively holding my breath to see what happens, because there's no reason we should be giving an inch to these Republicans. And, you know, if we have to go over that cliff, it's going to hurt the Republicans a lot more in the long term than it will the Democrats. So, you know, if we have to go over that little gentle slope, then so be it. But I'm not going, if I were an elected senator or congressman, I would, you would not catch me coming close to voting, to doing any cuts to any of those programs, because anyone who knows anything about them knows that they have not contributed to this deficit. And that's all I got to say about it. You know, it's just really, we're at a crossroads here. And once again, the president is faced with a choice. Granted, he doesn't have to face re-election, but what he does between now and 2016 will affect Democrats running in 2016. And darn if I'll vote for a Republican, for a Democrat, if the Democratic Party abandons me by making those cuts to Social Security and Medicaid. I just won't do it. So.
Well, I understand that. And, you know, all we can do right now, Kevin, is advocate our brains out, advocate to the last breath we possess, tell them hell no, and then if they do it anyway, punish them. Punish them. That's all.
Yep.
Kevin, I'm going to roll on, but I wish you the happiest of holidays, both tonight and tomorrow, and a wonderful year in the offing. You know, your ideas and your thoughts are always welcome and are always on point. And I know for a fact a real benefit to everyone who shares their time with all of us. So have yourself a good evening.
Thank you, Bob, and a Merry Christmas to all the Horn family.
Thank you. Bye now. Kevin calling from Colorado Springs. And we'll keep it going here for the moment. Hey, welcome to the program.
Merry Christmas, Bob.
Well, Merry Christmas, Jim.
And a Happy New Year to you and your family.
Thank you very kindly.
And pursuant to the last couple of callers, I can understand how they feel and the frustration which they have engendered. However, I don't see a lot of changes coming that will be beneficial because I believe that everything is on the table and...
Yeah, including us with an apple in our mouth.
Well, yeah, everybody is on the table, particularly the 99% and those people who will... unfortunately be hurt the most, to whom they have contributed the least to the financial crisis. That's the way it always is.
They play, we pay.
Yeah, you got it. And as far as third parties are concerned, I will never forget 2000 and what Ralph Nader did to Al Gore.
Yeah, or closer to home, what Charlton Heston did to the Republic in his one lone little miserable trip to Beckley.
Well, yeah, I mean...
Al Gore's gonna get your guns.
So would John Kerry in 2004.
Yeah.
And, you know...
But 2000 sticks in my craw because you had a long voting history in this state of West Virginians who depend upon the federal government for their very existence... at least supporting the presidential aspirations of the member of the party, the member of the person who led the party that sustained their existence, and those five miserable pissant electoral votes would have made Florida irrelevant.
Yeah, it would. I think a lot of these Republicans around here would like the people who traditionally voted Democrat, who basically realized the maintenance of these programs and how important they are to them, would just die off and go away. And
well, I think that's part of their calculus, don't you, Jim?
Yeah, I do believe so. Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, you talk about splintered parties and stuff like that. You know, regardless of what party the name is in. And I've been doing a little thinking about this, and, you know, in Germany before Hitler came to power, there were 32 parties.
No, I had no idea.
32. And all of them were just you know, fighting. They couldn't coalesce. They couldn't do what they were supposed to do. Or you had one person saying this and another person saying that, and we're going to do this. And they knew anything. And Hitler used that to his advantage. And he welded those 32 parties by hook or by crook into the National Socialist Party. And even though they only got 37 point something of the percent of the vote, it was enough to propel him into the chancellorship. And when Hindenburg died...
Hindenburg, who said, "I shall control this Hitler."
Well, they thought they could control him, but he had another thought coming. And, of course, in August of 1934, Hindenburg died. And, of course, Hitler moved in, and not by any revolution, but by legal maneuvering, became the head of state. And that's what happened there. Enough for historical stuff, because everybody knows about that, I'm sure. If they don't want to know about it, they ought to read about it. But what you said earlier was about Reed taking out the gun trauma from the
imagine. Let's say you've been threatened by someone with a gun.
I mean, what do you do about forensics as far as the solving of a murder or the solving of a crime that's been committed against a human being? Are you going to just ignore the fact that the guy is coming to the ER with a bullet hole in him? Are you not going to call the police and tell them that? I mean, is that what they mean? Or does that mean they...
No, that means, Jim, if you've gone into the emergency room and you have said, my boyfriend, let's say you go in and you say, "My boyfriend beat me up."
Right.
Well, the person who is doing the intake and the history is not allowed to ask, "Well, does he maintain any guns in the home?" So, therefore, nobody can have any advance warning of exactly how much danger the victim is in if she goes or he goes home. You follow?
I'm trying to, Bob, but that just doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me.
But that was removed from the Affordable Care Act at the specific request
of Harry Reid.
Of Harry Reid via of the NRA via Harry Reid. You know, and that's why I just want people to get it through their heads. The NRA is not a Republican problem. The NRA is an America problem.
Yeah, it is. In particular, the way they came out yesterday and have repeated to come out. And they are totally unrepentant and incalcitrant to any type of change in the possession of these weapons. I mean, they will wait till it just blows over. Until another incident happens, and then you're going to have another incident that will happen,
and look where we are now. Look at this guy today.
Yeah,
he set up an ambush, and you see what scares me about this case is that it will be used, because the NRA is a merciless, remorseless bunch. It will be used to advance the idea that restricting gun ownership don't work, because the guy had been convicted, you know, back when he beat his grandmother to death with a claw hammer. He had been convicted of a Class C manslaughter misdemeanor felony in New York, but that did not defeat his right to keep and bear arms, apparently, within the state code of New York.
A Class C.
Yeah.
When you take a claw hammer and kill somebody with it.
Yes.
My God, what do you classify as a Class A?
I don't know. Apparently, if somebody from Wall Street gets the hammer applied, that was cynical. But
well, I can appreciate the cynicism there. But you know, that that doesn't make any sense to me at all. And if we have to depend on Harry Reid to defend anything about putting entitlement programs on the table. Good luck.
I don't know about you, but I don't look good with an apple in my mouth.
No. I mean, you know, let's face it. You might not be on the table with an apple in your mouth, but you will be at the foot of the table like a dog.
Yeah, it's funny. I guess somehow along the way, we just don't merit a chair. Maybe it's a chair problem we have, Jim.
Well, I mean, you know, the 99% and a lot of people who depend on these entitlement programs and things of that nature are looked upon as subhuman and not worthy of a seat at the table, much less even a place in the kitchen counter helping to prepare the meal.
Bingo.
I mean, even Hitler once said, well, if you're going to die at the table, you better be in the kitchen helping out. But I think they've gone past that. That's just my personal opinion, and I'm going to get off here because it is Christmas Eve, and thank you for playing song by Marlene Dietrich. That's always
well, yeah, you, that's become a favorite of mine since you suggested it.
It's a beautiful song. She was a beautiful person in her own way, and I give her tribute to this night. And I inherited that respect for her from my parents, my father who was in World War II, and I think the first album I ever heard was a 78, and it showed her in fatigues and a baseball cap pulled over her head smoking a cigarette sitting on the wreckage of a German aircraft. And she could have gone into Hitler's Germany. Goebbels invited her to come in there and be one of the, you know, songstresses or entertainers for his people. But she said, no way. No way. And I have a lot of respect for her and the things that these people did. And we can't forget them.
Absolutely not.
And on that note, I'm going to bid you good night, and I hope that you have a delightful reunion with your family. Apparently, it's well underway, and I'll say bon nuit.
Bon nuit, Jim.
Okay.
Feliz Navidad, Joyeux Noël, Fröhliche Weihnacht. Have I gotten what is it in Russian?
Don't ask me that, but I will say y prospero año nuevo.
Good enough.
Okay.
Bye.
Good night.
Our buddy Jim. And as promised, we have reached the bottom of the third hour. Agnes has brought me a hot and steaming cup of tea here. Okay, a little background. Over the years, it has become a tradition in here to haul, not to haul, but for the kids to come in and read the Christmas story from the King James Version from the books of Matthew and Luke. It has traditionally been Margaret, Ferg, and Doodle. Doodle's not here this evening. She is over. She has been living with her eldest sister because her eldest sister has been going through some rather profound health difficulties and continues to do so. I was going to bring Doodle on, as I mentioned earlier in the evening, by phone. And then at the end of Doodle's portion of the reading, the next generation, two little boys and an absolutely vivacious little girl. She's the eldest. She's kindergarten now. We're simply going to yell Merry Christmas into the phone. As is so often the case in live broadcast, things change on the fly. Agnes came in here a few minutes ago and told me that things had changed on the fly. She's okay, but our eldest cracked up her automobile this evening. going into town to pick up our son-in-law at work. So things are a bit harum scarum there right now. So this year's reading will be just, and not just, but it'll be Margie and Ferg. And I wanted to put that out there so that I wouldn't get any mail saying, hey, where's the other one? Okay. So without further ado, the first voice you will hear will be that of our Margie. She'll take care of the Matthew part of the story. Let's see, let's get some appropriate music going. The Christmas Story from Matthew and Luke.
Now the birth of Jesus Christ was this, the wise. When as his mother Mary was espoused to Joseph before they came together, she was found with child of the Holy Ghost. Then Joseph, her husband, being a just man and not willing to make her a public example, was minded to put her away privily. But while he thought on these things, behold, the angel of the Lord appeared to him in a dream, saying, Joseph, thou son of David, fear not to take unto thee Mary thy wife, for that which is conceived in her is of the Holy Ghost. And she shall bring forth a son, and thou shalt call his name Jesus, for he shall save his people from their sins. Now all this was done, that it might be fulfilled, which was spoken of the Lord by the prophet, saying, Behold, a virgin shall be with child, and shall bring forth a son, and they shall call his name Emmanuel, which being interpreted is, God with us. Then Joseph, being raised from sleep, did as the angel of the Lord had bidden him, and took unto him his wife, and knew her not till she had brought forth her firstborn son, and he called his name Jesus.
And it came to pass in those days that there went out a decree from Caesar Augustus that all the world should be taxed. And this taxing was first made when Quirinius was governor of Syria. And all went to be taxed, every one into his own city. And Joseph also went up from Galilee, out of the city of Nazareth, unto Judea, unto the city of David, which is called Bethlehem, because he was of the house and lineage of David, to be taxed with Mary his espoused wife, being great with child. And so it was that while they were there, the days were accomplished that she should be delivered. And she brought forth her firstborn son, and wrapped him in swaddling clothes, and laid him in a manger, because there was no room for them in the inn. And they were in the same country shepherds abiding in the field, keeping watch over their flock by night. And lo, the angel of the Lord came upon them, and the glory of the Lord shone round about them, and they were sore afraid. And the angel said unto them, Fear not, for I behold, I bring you good tidings of great joy, which shall be to all people. For unto you is born this day in the city of David a Savior, which is Christ the Lord. And there shall be a sign unto you, ye shall find the babe wrapped in swaddling clothes, lying in a manger. And suddenly there was with the angel a multitude of heavenly hosts praising God, and saying, Glory to God in the highest, and on earth peace, good will toward men. And it came to pass, as the angels were gone away from them into heaven, the shepherds said one to another, Let us now go, even unto Bethlehem, and see this thing which has come to pass, which the Lord hath made known to us. And they came with haste, and found Mary and Joseph, and the babe lying in a manger. And when they had seen it, they made known abroad the saying which was told to them concerning this child. All that they heard, it wondered at those things which were told them by the shepherds. But Mary kept all these things and pondered them in her heart.
And there we have it. For several years running now, the Christmas story.
as interpreted from the King James Bible via the Kincaid kids. So now the second portion of our evening's entertainment. Not yet.
No, I know. You're using your very deep voice. Yes, you are.
It's not much.
You're Jeff Fader.
No.
So now, Ferg also brought his guitar in, and he's been doing this for a couple of years. And you can hear that progress as well. Stand by, please. I don't like to make microphone boom noises. We gotta get this all arranged.
Christmas, everyone, and a Happy New Year.
Thanks, Bob. So, there's about a quarter of the program left. If you want to use that time just to send some Merry Christmas shout-outs to folks, that's cool. Thanks for all the kind responses. I will show Ferg the email after the show's over. Right now, he's probably got about, 12 quarts of 20W-40 adrenaline coursing through him. Wanted to share some thoughts with you that came from our buddy Philip. He said, I didn't send Christmas cards. I don't send Christmas cards. At least instead until they institutionalize me, which seems to me more imminent than depriving me of my sacred arsenal and handheld nuclear weapons for when the apocalypse comes, I send a Christmas message, as is evident below. The best of holidays to you, Agnes, and yours, as well as the Horn family. Thank you and the Horn audience so much for providing such thoughtful and meaningful discussion and for your having read my bizarre emails. My daughters hear them being read and think I have acquired celebrity status. I'm too busy basking in my new, albeit totally bogus, fame here at home to tell them that the Horn is a no-profit, non-profit, no-profit, P-R-O-F-I-T, and non-profit, P-R-O-P-H-E-T, venture on the Internet. Dadgummit, I think the cat's out of the bag, Philip. Let them enjoy the delusion that their penniless dad is too proud of his art, question marks, to accept contributions from commercial radio and tempt corruption while millions are listening. In all sincerity, after a year without income, I hope to return to work this year to be able to afford to donate on a regular basis. In the past year, two undocumented friends from Mexico and Africa, respectively, have returned to their homelands because of lack of opportunity here. What does that tell you about the economy? And lastly, a very belated congratulations to Brother Albert and his wife, Renee. Believe it or not, I listened to the show during which he announced the birth four times and was awestruck by the conversation. Listening to you and him discuss witnessing childbirth brought back vivid and cherished memories of my own children's birth. I recall being in absolute awe of my wife, loving her even more for her strength and endurance, and thinking that the birth process was simply miraculous, if not outright magical. Anyone who says that women are weaker than men is a fool. That from our friend Philip. And those kinds of words, and I see them fairly often via Facebook, via email, via Twitter, stand as confirmation for the effort, such as it is, that we make here. I had another one come in a few days ago, over the weekend, after the show had closed from the week. For the week. And again, it was a profound and humbling statement about what it is we together are doing here. Not me. We. Not me. Us. All together. The madcap hijinks of the chat room. The wonderful conversations that take place in the Horn Malloy Skype chat on weekend nights. And what happens here for 3 hours a night. Christopher wrote from Japan after last week's rather painful conversation, series of conversations, after, well, you know why it was painful. It's still painful. And it will be pain without surcease until such time as we together decide to do something about the root cause of it. Christopher wrote in and said, I wanted to leave a quick note just to let you know how much I enjoy your social commentaries in light of the recent events. Not only in this time, of course, but you introduce a level of rationality and insight not found anywhere else as far as I am aware. This is regularly the case, but with all the refuse floating around the establishment punditry, your analyses and commentary are refreshing, to say the least. The insights you're able to draw from your background and experience is especially valuable, as are, of course, those of the contributors to your radio show. I only wish that more could experience your perspectives. Society would be saner as a result. Thank you kindly, Christopher for that, and thank you to Don for chiming in on that thread. Because it is deeply humbling to know that we are succeeding at what we set out to do. There are those we miss, and we miss them most at Christmas time, because it is a time for reflecting both on past and future. And those to whom, even in a family as small as ours, the loss of any one is noticed readily and for a very long time. And so we think of them as well. I hope you all have a very happy day tomorrow. Or, on certain parts of the planet. Hi, Robert. Hi, Angry. Hey, John. A happy day today. An intensely happy day. However you celebrate the holiday, whether it be for Christmas, the solstice, or at its core simply the opportunity to remember those who most matter and have mattered, however you celebrate them, I hope you are able to celebrate them with real joy and abiding peace. Because that's what it boils down to, isn't it? Tim from L.A. writing in, he says, thank you for all the years of horn, and I deeply appreciate you not berating me when I call in. I hate calling in as I get scared shitless. Gee, I love free speech. Anyway, thank you for tolerating my nonstop comments about Rush, the band people, and for reading my long-winded and boring email. Well, it is neither, and it is always welcome, and you've got to learn, Tim, not to be afraid to call into this program, because we haven't berated anybody lately that I know of. I mean, once this program is established as a right-wing free zone, and therefore there is no need to berate anyone. The crazy old drunk uncle at the end of the bar ain't welcome here. But anyway, Tim from L.A. says, happy holidays, and in Japanese, Merry Kurimasu. Merry Kurimasu. Remember, the U in Masu is silent. Merry Kurimasu. I'll get there, Tim. Ed writing in, Merry Christmas to you and your family. May the Horn family grow and learn from each other in the new year. Your friend. Thank you, Ed. Thank you to all of you who have made this continuing effort possible. The Horn continues onward solely by virtue of your willingness to see it continue. It doesn't happen by magic. It happens because there are progressive people of goodwill who are absolutely committed to the idea that we will have a conversation that is not interrupted by commercials for bowling balls picked up by Swedish vacuum cleaners from mattresses, that will not be interrupted by pitches to buy gold now, that will not be shortened so that we may bring you a message from some herbal concoctor of something that will grow hair on said bowling ball or on virtually any part of your corporeal person. That's how the Horn sustains and continues. It's always at a sort of a
It's, well, it's always on the last frayed thread of a near-broken shoestring that we operate. But that's okay, as long as 1 month can lead to the next one. The love of this little tribe all of us goes out to all of you, because living where we do, having the community that you all have built around us, is reassuring and affirming. And dare I say it, even blessing. And I love this email coming in from Kim. Thanks for keeping Ray busy for 3 hours a night and for the podcasts I listen to as I fall asleep. Kim. I find out more and more how many people I'm able to help sleep the night through, and, well, I choose to take that in the most positive light possible. I realize a little more every day just how special all of this is. And so with our thanks to all of you, our wishes for the merriest of Christmases to everyone, and a happy holiday, however you celebrate it, be it Christmas or Hanukkah or Kwanzaa, or simply by sitting and drinking white wine in the sun. To everyone, but especially to those who make it all happen on a volunteer basis. Our chat room moderators, Lottie, Sparky, Texas Betsy. Sparky is also the moderator of the Horn Malloy Skype chat. That thing's been growing lately. Thanks to John Fox, a friend of so very many long years now, who's always there to help keep me, you know, out of the treetops when things go technically sideways. I hope your Christmas is proceeding most joyfully right now, John, and to Gail as well. And Merry Christmas, of course, to Ben Birch. I think he's on the road right now, over the river and through the woods, as it were. Please always remember that nothing of the Horn happens without the tireless efforts of Ben Birch at the White Rose Society. WhiteRoseSociety.org. And of course, at this holiday, thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the people at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and AcheAct.org. May a new year bring us in Appalachia the help and hope for which Coal River Mountain Watch has so determinedly worked for so long with so little.
Of the elders, we feel the restlessness of youth. We hear the thunder of the lies. We hold aloft the light of truth. We raise the banner of our voices to the skies. This is the future, sisters and brothers. Come unite and organize. Power, there is power in a union. Power, there is power in our hands. Power, we stand and fight together. There is power in a union of many lands. Power, gonna reach across the border. Power, come at all.
Come